I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. We kick off Midday Candidates Week today. Between now and Friday at 2 p.m., we'll present all three Democratic candidates for governor of Maryland, all four Republicans seeking their party's nomination, and the three Democratic candidates for attorney general. First up, Charles Lawler, a Tea Party activist, businessman, ordained preacher, who is running in the Republican gubernatorial primary after making an earlier run for Congress. Among his priorities, eliminating Maryland's personal income tax and estate tax, lowering the corporate income tax, and rolling back the state sales tax. His push to make the state more business friendly. His running mate, Ken Timmerman, joins us today as well. A conversation, my questions and yours for Charles Lawler, just ahead on Midday after the news. Welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City and the Eastern Shore of Maryland, streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. The Maryland primary election is a week from tomorrow. Early voting has already started. There are four Republican candidates for governor, three Democrats vying for their party's nomination. All of them will be guests on our show this week. We here at Midday are devoting an entire week of programming, 10 hours of public radio, beginning today, to the candidates in the primary. Each gubernatorial candidate will be with me in Studio A for an hour to answer my questions and those of our listeners. And on Wednesday, we'll be devoting both hours to the three Democratic candidates running for attorney general. An additional hour of programming will be given to the most interesting and hotly contested local and legislative district races around the state, with reporting and analysis by Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com and Len Lazarick of MarylandReporter.com. They'll be with us tomorrow during the 1 o'clock hour. To kick things off here today, in the noon hour of our Monday show, Charles Lawler is with us, Republican gubernatorial candidate. Charles Lawler is his second trip here to Midday today. He is a Charles County businessman, U.S. Marine Corps Reserve officer. He's also an ordained preacher, has been a Tea Party activist in Maryland, and is joining us again for this hour of the show. Charles Lawler, welcome back to Midday. Nice to see you.
I am honored, Dan, to be here with you, and I think that you're going to see by having us on first, we're going to win this thing, and you're going to be look like the king when it's all said and done.
Oh, really? Absolutely.
You had the leader on first.
We'll see. A week from tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
This is your second trip to our show, and I think you were here a couple of months ago. Maybe it was longer. It runs together for me, so pardon me.
And probably, you and me both.
Probably for you, too. Well, which gets me to this to the question I wanted to ask each of the candidates this week as they return to our show for the first time and have been out campaigning. You've been out to lots of candidates' forums. You've been out to dinners, lunches, breakfasts. You've met Democrats, Republicans, independents who can't vote in the primary. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you could tell me what you're hearing from people, not about who's going to win, but what's on the mind of Marylanders. And take out of that answer for me people who have an extreme view one way or the other, left or right, about a particular issue.
Yeah.
Because you know those. Those are the guys that stand up at the town hall and they have a particular question they want to ask you, usually about the Second Amendment.
We're talking in general stuff.
Yeah. What do you hear in general from people about the state of Maryland? Right track, wrong track? What's important to them? What are the priorities, would you say, after so many months of campaigning?
Well, I'm at Israel Baptist Church at one of their forums, one of the largest forums they have, over 2,000 people. Lady walks up to me and she says, you know what? I was surprised. I was so glad to hear you speak. I was, because that whole Tea Party thing scared me about you. But I am going to support you, and I'm going to vote for you for governor. I'm actually going to re-register as a Republican. You'll be the first Republican I vote for. But here's why. The economy is everyone's buzzword. The fact that we can't find jobs here, private jobs here, the way we used to. The fact that Baltimore City used to be a trend leader when it came to manufacturing jobs here in our state. And now in some areas of Baltimore City, One in three people don't have a job. The hopelessness that exists, that kind of gives way to heroin addictions, marijuana issues, substance abuse issues. There's a whole lot of things that are that these problems are starting to cultivate that go back to the economy and not having jobs. The number two thing people are tired of is professional politicians playing with their votes and playing with their idea, what they believe is right for Maryland, using wedge issues without falling back to everyday citizens. You would be amazed, Dan, how many Democrats have told me, will you commit to me, Charles, you become our governor, that you will pass legislation that limits the terms so we can get rid of these full-time politicians. The two resolving issues, jobs and the economy, and these professional politicians that continue to separate people. I would go as far as to say segregate them using wedge issues so we can't see clearly what the nonpartisan solutions are. That's what I'm hearing.
You've gone to Democratic forums as well as Republican ones. In fact, in the profile about you in The Sun, we made a note about that. The story leads with that anecdote about you attending Democratic candidates' forums as well as Republican ones. So,
Dan, we've been
what do you hear from both sides? Because you know, the Sun poll, I was struck by this in the Sun poll that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, tied for second. I saw that.
I had you tied for second on the Republican side. But no, there was this right track, wrong track question in Maryland. 59% of Democrats feel Maryland is on the right track. 84% of Republicans felt Maryland was on the wrong track. Wait a minute, did I have that right? Or was it 58%? I'm sorry, 58%. Of Marylanders approved. I'll get that correct. Focus on that 84% for me. Why do 84% of Republicans think Maryland is on the wrong track? Why that striking difference?
Well, there are three primary goals constitutionally, talking about our state constitution, that the Maryland legislature is responsible for, as well as our governor, lieutenant governor, when they're in session for 90 days, one of which is, of course, the budget. Number two and three is primary and secondary education. When you spend the vast majority of your time, of the 45 days, or excuse me, the 90 days you have in the legislature, discussing whether or not a transgender bill is good for Maryland, it clearly shows all Marylanders that, number one, you're out of touch as an elected official and you have too much time on your hands. I think that's why they want some of these guys fired. They're not being serious about the issues of Maryland. And then these same politicians that talk about the importance of our economic position, that we're struggling, that we need to bring jobs back, that we currently have a $220 million structural deficit, Dan, they're the same ones that voted themselves a pay increase this year and did not stop themselves from gaining $9,000 more a year for a part-time job. These types of things are really, they have angered the population, Republican or Democrat. And that's why I'm excited to be one of the only candidates, Republican or Democrat, that goes to both forums. I said this to you on your program before. I don't want to be the best Republican governor I can be. I don't want to be the best Democratic governor I can be. I want to be the best governor for Maryland I can be, which is why our team is working so hard to go to both forums, to both sets of people, to meet with liberals, conservatives, independents. It doesn't matter to us. So you know where we stand, because we're going to ask them to hire us in November.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here for listeners to join into this conversation. Join me in asking questions of Republican candidate for Governor Charles Lawler in this hour of midday. Toll-free long distance, good from Western Maryland, the Eastern Shore. If you need to make a long-distance call, 866-661-9309. Or write a question by email. Send it in by email. midday@wypr.org. I was correct. The Sun poll showed most Democrats, 59%, think the state is headed in the right direction, but an overwhelming majority of Republicans, 84%, think it's not.
Yeah, but you got to watch those polls. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a poll.
Yeah, and take it for what it's worth. I'm not knocking them one way or the other. I'm just saying be very concerned about that. The Democrats that I meet, whether in Prince George's County, whether in Montgomery County or Baltimore City, are all telling me the same thing. Charles, you get to the primary, we're going to make sure you win this election for governor. We need someone like you. We don't want a politician. In fact, one said, we want a Marine. Send a Marine to clean this mess up. I'm all about that to get this thing done for the citizens of Maryland.
Let me ask you something about the anecdote you shared at the beginning here, that a woman came up to you and said that she was worried about that Tea Party thing.
I mean, yeah.
You led Americans for Prosperity in Maryland.
Yes.
There was a Tea Party organization affiliated with the Koch brothers.
Yes.
So have you softened your messaging about what the Tea Party stands for? So tell us
I'm not
why you
let
were...
that soften word get right. out there too long.
Well, tell
us why. I do not soften my message.
How'd you win her over then?
Here's why. Because when we talk about Tea, as in Tea Party, that acronym stands for Taxed Enough Already. That means over 90% of Marylanders are Tea Partiers. The problem, however, is sometimes the media tries to take organizations, especially when you deal with people that like to be extremist on one side or the other, and they like to paint that organization around those extremist remarks and attitudes. I don't stand for extremism, and I never have. I would walk up to those, when I went to those Tea Party rallies and saw people with those pictures of Barack Obama with the face of Adolf Hitler, it infuriated me. I mean, so much so that I actually confronted two or three different gentlemen that had that sign up and said, listen, this is not your movement. You're not part of the same Tea Party I'm part of. So by being able to get out there and talk to people, like one lady said to me in Prince George's County, believe me when I tell you this, Prince George's County citizen had a Democratic for Lawler meet and greet at her home. And one lady who was 73, 74 years old, African-American lady said, Charles, these taxes are killing us. What are you going to do for seniors to help us? And when I laid my platform out there, Dan, in short, how I wanted to make sure that seniors tax were exempt, seniors pay, their pensions were exempted from taxes. She's like, you know what? You've got my vote, and I'm going to support you and work hard for you, even as a Democrat. That's what's getting over to people. I'm not changing my message. I'm simply battling the wrong perceptions that have been, in my opinion, provided by a media that wants to try to ostracize organizations.
What does Tea Party stand for? You said TEA, Taxed Enough Already.
Taxed Enough Already. That's it.
But they call for general downsizing of federal government, state government. I mean, well, really? You want to do away with personal income tax?
Income tax over a five-year period, phase it out completely. Yes, sir.
I mean, so how do you fill in the blank there
when
you phase
Again,
out income tax?
I'm so glad you asked that, because that's even more misunderstandings about our current budget. Did you know, for example, that in the past 8 years, we've spent $10 billion more in revenue over an eight-year period? Back in 2006, we spent $29 billion. Now in 2014, we're spending $40 billion. Your essential services have not increased by $11 billion. Cost of living hasn't even risen at the same pace of spending of the state government. So the assumption that they're spending every penny responsibly is 100% inaccurate. We have found at least $2.3, if not $3 billion of money currently in the budget that's not spent wisely or correctly. It's being blown away. They had to find a way, for example, to help meet the difference in cost for this purple line of about $1.1 billion over what it was proposed to be budgeted to spend. And then as a result of that, they tried to find more taxes and more fees to make up for that $1 billion shortfall. We're constantly robbing funds, robbing Peter to pay Paul with these trust funds. We need to put an enforceable lockbox on these things. The short answer is this.
But if you do away with personal income tax in Maryland, phase it out.
It only represents $6.2 billion of the overall general revenue. We've increased almost twice that in 10 years. I'm not talking about stopping the spending. I simply want to control it.
You want to eliminate personal income tax?
Over a five-year period.
Do you have other taxes that you've targeted for full elimination or curtailing?
All 84 of them need to be looked at. That's why I'm honored to have Ken Timmerman, who will be on the program a little bit later. He's an investigative reporter by trade, very smart young man. He's got a book on Benghazi coming out in June on the 24th. He's going to take a look at all those new 84 taxes and regulations and fees that have been passed on citizens over the past 8 years to see if the money is going where it's supposed to go, number one, and to ensure that we're not doing the Robin Peter to pay Paul thing, taking money from one tax bill that's supposed to go, for example, to education. The gambling bill was supposed to go to education. Guess what? It went to three other funds to include education. So we're not doing the right thing with the money by the people of Maryland. We investigate those. We roll back the ones that don't make sense. We keep in place the ones that do.
Ken Timmerman, Charles Lawler just references, Charles Lawler's running mate. He will be joining us today for a few minutes by phone, and as will in the second hour of today's show, Heather Mazier's running mate, Reverend Delman Coates. Heather Mazier, of course, Democratic candidate for governor, will be joining us at 1 o'clock. Charles Lawler is our guest in this hour of the show. You're welcome to call in with a comment or question at 410-662-8780. Dan Roderick's here on Midday. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR News station, WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. It's Midday Candidates Week all week long here. Charles Lawler, Republican candidate for governor, and next Tuesday's primary is our guest in this hour of the show. Let's go over one other thing with you as far as taxes. Sales tax, where are you on the sales tax?
Well, I would love to go.
It's at 6% now,
it's
right?
At 6 now. I'd love to get the sales tax to 5%. I'd love to get the corporate tax from 8.25% down to 5%. But, Dan, none of this stuff can be done in 1 year. My first priority is to take a look at spending where it is and ensure that we do the external audits on the taxes we've already passed. We need to find out where ground zero is. We've been spending out of control for the past 8 years. When you talk about a $10 billion increase in 8 years, that's a big deal. That's a 36% increase in 10 years. And again, CPI doesn't keep pace with that. So let's find out where we are first. The objective is to grow the economy, however. And the only way to grow the economy, Dan, is we've got to bring businesses back to our state that have left us. Well, I'm sure you know the number. Over 4,000 businesses. In fact, Doug Gansler says there have been over 8,000 businesses that have left our state in that same amount of time. So when you look at where we're at and how we're struggling at the rate in which we are, until we're able to start bringing businesses back to our state and get people working again, manufacturing jobs, nanotechnology, fracking up there in Western Maryland, excessive regulations and fees that need to be overturned on farmers and watermen so they can do their job on the Eastern Shore in Southern Maryland. Let's grow technological industries, NASA cybersecurity, or NSA, excuse me, cybersecurity. Let's start growing our economy by bringing jobs back to Maryland, and we'll have all of the money for spending that we need to maintain and grow and continue to maintain our economy.
You support hydrofracking for natural gas in Western Maryland?
I do, safely. I do support and will help to spearhead as much as I can safe fracking in Western Maryland.
And when you refer to excessive regulation of farmers and watermen on the Eastern Shore, what are you talking about?
We're talking about taking a look at that phosphorus management tool. We're talking about looking at the tolls.
You mean it's too strong?
Say again?
You think our regulation is too strong currently for farmers?
We need to identify what the pollution is and where it stems from. Currently, according to the last research I've seen, over 60% of the pollutants that enter the Chesapeake Bay come down the Susquehanna River and over the Conowingo Dam, which we've done nothing about, by the way, and we could have. This current administration could have done something about that Conowingo Dam, but they did not. So I'm concerned that we're putting excessive regulations and we're strangling our farmers and our watermen on failed data because we want to keep our buddies, whether with a job or over regulations. I mean, look at this $38 toll, which is killing farmers just in terms of transporting their goods and services throughout the state of Maryland. We can and must and will, let me say that, we will do a better job.
Do you think it's a good thing that some 340,000 Marylanders have new or better health insurance as a result of the Affordable Care Act in Maryland?
Well, the problem is the only thing affordable in the Affordable Care Act is the actual word affordable. What our citizens are finding, Dan, and again, this is something else I've talked to so many Democrats and Republicans about. They've got expensive premiums. They have to pay upfront fees when they get to the doctor's office before they can even file the claim. One person told me, I'm just throwing $249 a month away because of the cost that I have to pay on the back end when it comes to getting health care. Not emergency room health care, but just trying to provide preventive care for me and for my family.
You're talking about people who have either gotten new policies or have upgraded policies in some way.
Through the Affordable Health Care Act, yes, sir.
And they're complaining to you that their copay is too high, that their premiums are too high?
Premiums are way too high. Way too high. Now, of course, Dan, but what opponents of my view will tell you is that's because we don't have enough people signed up yet. And that's an interesting argument. When you can go to insurance companies all day long direct and get cheaper rates and more affordable health care today. And that's just based upon that one independent private company. We need to go to private health care exchanges. Get the public out of it completely. And you know what I mean by that. Go to private health care exchanges, allow for regional health care companies to compete in this private exchange.
Well, we have that. It's just that we provide subsidies to people who can't afford the full the full bill.
No, we need
it is private. There is private insurance still exists under ACA.
Private insurance does, but along with this public health care exchange comes a requirement through the Affordable Health Care Act that it must be done whether you want to or not.
Yeah, it's a mandate.
Exactly.
Yeah, or you pay a tax for not having insurance.
Exactly.
You don't think, well, what part of that don't you like, Charles Lawler?
The mandate part. Here's what I believe should happen. People will, of their own free will, purchase health care if it's affordable. The current system, it's not affordable. And there's two other things we're missing before you cut me off earlier.
I'm not going to cut you
off. No, for earlier, because I'm going down a road here. I want to make sure your listeners understand the full package deal.
Right.
It's not just private exchange that allows for competition with other healthcare companies across state lines to increase the size of the pool. It's also meaningful tort reform, Dan, to keep doctors and bring them back to our state. It's also ensuring that within the healthcare industry, the cost for their products and their services are published so you know what they are before you need them. It's important for a citizen to be able to know that they can get an x-ray 40% cheaper at another hospital right down the road if they so choose.
As far as premiums go, though, in a free market with private insurance, how do you lower rates?
Competition will lower them.
Okay. Charles Lawler is our guest in this hour of the show. He's Republican candidate for governor of Maryland. Please phone in with your questions at 410-662-8780. Kevin in Baltimore, we'll go to you for your question for Charles Lawler. Go right ahead, please.
Yes, this is regarding a comment that was made at the beginning of the show, I guess, about why Marylanders were upset or not happy with the right direction we were going on. And Mr. Lawler mentioned that people might be upset because of transgender legislation that was going through the House, kind of saying that's a minimal issue or an unimportant issue. And I'd just like to ask Mr. Lawler why he thinks that's an unimportant issue or why he thinks human rights and protection of threatened minority groups is an unimportant issue.
Kevin, I appreciate your question, and I am not a proponent of discrimination of any type. But let me be clear. Whether the bathroom is male or female, there's just as many male bathrooms as there are female bathrooms. The issue for me is this. Every Marylander has a choice which bathroom to choose based upon their gender. Excuse me, not a choice, but they know which bathroom to choose based upon their gender. We don't need legislation that entitles anyone to make a decision if they're male to go into a female bathroom or vice versa based upon their transgender feeling issues. If a private company like a mall or any other private company like Panera Bread, if they want to build a separate bathroom, just like they build family bathrooms now, that is the choice of that company to do so. But legislation and legislators that go into this 90-day session to focus on creating a bill that allows for people to choose which bathroom they want to use based upon the gender they feel specific one way or the other that particular morning is not good use of taxpayer dollars. If we're talking about discrimination issues, and I do know the bathroom choice is one part of the bill is larger than that. And I understand firsthand discrimination, Kevin, but I do not agree, and I do believe the bill went way too far. If we want to build separate bathrooms completely, that's one thing. But taking 45 days to determine whether or not a person can wake up one morning that male, that feels female, and can use a female bathroom as a result, I will never agree to that.
410-662-8780. Another question for Charles Lawler. This is Jason in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Jason.
Hi, Mr. Lawler. I hope you can hear me all right.
I can, Jason. How you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Very well. Thank you.
I'm a resident of Baltimore City, and I'm registered as a Democrat, but over my adult life, I voted for both Democrats and Republicans in local and national elections.
Yes, sir.
And I think I'm like a lot of other people in that regard. I'm currently planning to vote for Delegate Mazur based on the fact that she is the only person I've heard so far take a strong stance for marijuana legislative reform and to put an end to the war on drugs that we currently have going on in this country. In the state of Maryland alone, we incarcerate thousands of people for nonviolent drug-related crimes, often leading to repeat incarcerations, felony records that prevent people from joining the workforce, and generally ruin people's lives over substances that are more and more found to be basically benign, aside from their impact through law enforcement and through the legislative and criminal process.
All right, so your question, Jason, your question, please.
Yes, sir. I feel very strongly on this, and I'm just wondering what your position on marijuana reform is, Mr. Lawler, what your position on reforming the war on drugs is.
Well, I think the war on drugs is important for us to fight, I can tell you that much, whether we're talking about urban centers like Baltimore City or the rural areas of Western Maryland and Eastern Shore. I've talked with sheriffs across the state, from Sheriff Mike Lewis to Sheriff Jenkins up in Frederick County to Sheriff High in Prince George's County. And what I found is, regardless of party affiliation, these sheriffs and law enforcement agents do not think the legalization of marijuana is a good idea. First and foremost, it is a gateway drug. Secondly, with marijuana and heroin and other drugs of choice for our teens, which are all illegal and should remain so and will in a Lawler term administration, it only makes their jobs that much harder for them to do in their areas. Listen, Jason, I'm going to tell you this way. I think it's ironic in a country, in a state where we live, where we're trying to stop people from smoking cigarettes, that now we're entertaining the idea of legalizing marijuana. Our focus is not right. So to that end, we need to focus on rebuilding our economy. Legalizing marijuana is not going to do that. I will never be a fan to do that in our administration, so I apologize if that cost me your vote. I understand, but I will not stand for that.
Tell me about your view on the war on drugs. I mean, a lot of people said a great deal of money has been spent arresting, incarcerating people over possession of drugs, use of drugs. People who are addicted to drugs have been sent to prison. We have the highest incarceration rate per capita in the history of the world. And do you concede that there's been some uneven enforcement of the drug laws in the United States that has led to this incarceration rate we see?
Oh, without question, Dan. I can tell you that in many communities, specifically the arrests because of smaller amounts of marijuana are certainly unfair and not justified. I've seen that even with members of my own family. However,
well, excuse me, then let me ask you, how do you feel about decriminalization anyway?
Well, you know, that's an issue that really has to be discussed. I do know they passed that law currently in the House of Delegates. And I have talked to sheriffs about that, you know, specifically here in Baltimore City, have no problem with the decriminalization of marijuana. My concern is the slow, meticulous steps toward legalizing it fully. That's my biggest problem with that. But I want to speak to something else that's near and dear to my heart that will help this war on drugs, and that is rebuilding our families across our state and across our nation. I think that we've given way to a system or a direction where if we don't start making it popular to fall back on the family. It doesn't matter what type of family you have, as long as we have people in communities that start working together, allowing 501c3s and nonprofits to work alongside of families to help rebuild our communities. That's how you get rid of the drug and the hopelessness that it brings with it and the abuse it brings with it. In addition to that, we need to bring more jobs to our state. People, there's a feeling of hopelessness because so many young men and young women can't get a job. I just left Morgan State University where one college student told me I'm going to have to stay in school because I can't find a job when I leave university, Morgan State University.
Well, where
other
do you
schools.
See potential for growth in terms of the economy?
Where's growth?
Yeah. Where do you see growth in Maryland? Where would you target? And would you at all target government efforts in support of growth of the economy?
I would. First,
without cutting, I mean, besides cutting taxes, is there anything else you would do in terms of business development?
Yes. Let's start with building a strong manufacturing base right here in Baltimore City. Let's create enterprise zones that bring our manufacturing jobs back and says, listen, hire folks from this community, hire folks from here in Baltimore City, provide necessary tax breaks for you to do business in. We're going to reward you. We're going to partnership with these types of businesses. We talked about Western Maryland and the needs they have and how fracking can turn that entire region around. Currently, Pennsylvania's drawing natural gas resources right from under the state of Maryland. We can and must do better. Growth comes for a state. Not because government goes into the hiring business, but because government creates the right atmosphere for our businesses to prosper and our employees to prosper. We want every citizen to prosper. A rising tide lifts all boats. If we can get families strengthened, And I know you can't do it legislatively, but at least you can start the conversation and start talking about it so people can believe in that again. If we can bring businesses back to our state, if we can expect more from our elected officials in terms of how they carry themselves ethically and morally, we can see tremendous growth in the state of Maryland.
Do you think the government needs to provide tax incentives for businesses in a free market? If you take the free market approach, every man for himself, basically, winners win, losers lose. Does government have a role in providing subsidy or tax incentive in some way for businesses?
Ever so close. That is a fine line that you walk. And I'm with you, Dan. I know where you're going, and I appreciate that. It just...
I hope I wasn't giving away my view on that.
I was just asking
I think is a provocative question, because you hear a lot of this from Tea Party and other conservatives saying, let the free market rule.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially when it comes to marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, they're complete libertarians on this.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to government in support of business development.
I think when it comes to things like enterprise zones, where you are taking a company or manufacturing company into a particular area, if you can find a way to incentivize that company, not making them do anything, but incentivizing them to hire citizens that are right there in that community, I think it can go a long way to building growth, rebuilding families, and giving hope.
By the way, earlier in the show, Charles Lawlor referred to a $40 billion as the figure that the Maryland state budget is headed toward, and he is correct. The trend is upward, and it's the fiscal 2015 budget passed at $39 billion.
If you think that's significant, yeah. Have your research team look up what it was back in 2006.
Right.
It's gone up $10 billion.
When we get back, we're going to speak a little bit with Charles Lawlor's running mate, Ken Timmerman, who you've chosen as a running mate to assign to the task of finding waste in government spending.
Is yes, sir.
Right? 410-662-8780. This is the first hour of Candidates Week here in WYPR. If you have any questions for Charles Lawlor, please give us a ring. 866-661-9309 is toll-free number from the distant corners of the state. If you have a question you want to address by email, try our address at midday@wypr.org. We're also on Twitter, @MiddayWYPR, or just Dan Rodericks. Can I go back to Obamacare or Affordable Care Act in Maryland for a moment?
You sure
have
can.
You said on the campaign trail that you would try to repeal it? Of course, you can't repeal a federal law, but what would you do about it? Aside from what we've already discussed about the free market.
I'm in favor of a private exchange, which means I would stay it for the state of Maryland, and we'd hold off to see if our private exchange could work. I believe it would.
So if you were in Congress, well, that's a different role, but would you be still voting to repeal it? Because that's what they do down there.
I'm running for governor. I'm not running to
okay.
be in Congress.
Okay, I was just
I'm
curious.
Not running for president.
So you deal with what you have in Maryland, except you would further privatize the marketplace. That's what
would.
You're saying. And you think by further privatization, allowing people to purchase any insurance policy anywhere from any state, right?
Yes.
Specifically within
our region.
Your theory is that would increase competition and lower rates. Is that it?
Look what happened with the McDonald's dollar value menu. I'm serious. Before the dollar value menu at McDonald's, it cost you $2 to $3 to get a burger. Now you can go to 6 or 7 different establishments to buy a burger under $1 because of McDonald's dollar value menu. It's what happens. Competition lowers costs.
410-662-8780. We'll be joined in a minute by Ken Timmerman, who's the running mate with Charles Lawlor, to hear from him a little bit. Let me take a couple of quick calls first, and then we'll get to Ken. This is John, who's phoning us from the Eastern Shore. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, how are you today?
All right, John, go right ahead with your question for Charles.
Good. My question for Mr. Lawlor is, can he tell me, according to the Constitution, what the main purpose of civil government is?
I sure can. It's to ensure for the welfare and the common defense of everyday citizens. We have well extended ourselves beyond that. In fact, some of our elected officials would dare go as far as to say, well, how do you define the common protection or the common good of citizens, the common rights of citizens? I believe it's education at the local level. That's civil government at the local level. I believe that it's defense and ensuring that we provide for our citizens a safe environment in which to work, play, and live. I also believe that we need to ensure that our transportation, whether it's across our state or even through states into other states, that it's maintained relatively well. Outside of that, we need to be a part of, as your governor, I need to be a part of bringing nonprofits and other entities together so we can work together and build a better state for mankind when it comes to our social issues, and use whatever resource we can to help build that gap. But to continue to extend our state financially by growing our spending over 2, 4, 5, 6% a year, to me, it's unethical. It's criminal. We can do better.
One thing about that, how do you feel about extending public education into pre-K in Maryland?
I think it's a fantastic idea. But again, we have to ask ourselves, where's the money coming from, and leave those decisions, those hard decisions, up to our local governments. That's why I don't stand with Common Core. I don't believe that Pennsylvania Avenue, or to be honest with you, Annapolis, should be making decisions in those educational centers in Charles County, Maryland, in Baltimore County, or even in Allegheny County. I believe those things should be kept and maintained at the local level. Our education plan calls for all parents and students to be able to send their students to the school of their choice, private, parochial, or otherwise, whether charter school, whether private school, whether public school, and their tax dollars should follow their decision. So if you want to send your child to a private school, there's nothing wrong with us having vouchers so you don't, Dan, have to pay twice so your child can go to a school system of your choice.
A couple of follow-ups here. If you were governor, you would live with the fact that we allow medical marijuana use in Maryland? There's some realities. If you were elected, these laws are already in place.
As it currently stands?
Yeah.
I you know what? I would, because I am the governor of the state of Maryland, so I do believe in the people and the people's decision, but I'm not sure if I would be comfortable because I don't personally believe in that. And I'll tell you why. We've been dealing with pain issues for years without using marijuana. There's so many things that we've already done without having to institute marijuana. Why does marijuana become such a practical next step now when other things to relieve pain and issues that many of our seniors and some of our kids deal with have been maintained by the kind of medications we currently have?
One more quick question before we get to Ken Timmerman. Jay in Baltimore, go right ahead with your question for Charles Lawler.
Hi, Mr. Lawler. Thanks very much for having me on the show here. And my question is where are you getting your information on the cost of private health insurance, which I think you said something to the effect of there's a lot of private health insurance out there you can get versus the problems with Obamacare. As an example, real briefly, I have two part-time jobs, neither of which provide health insurance. I checked into the private health insurance industry, and basically I could have gotten for relatively cheap, $70 a month, a catastrophic policy of $10,000. I pay the first $10,000, and the health insurance company, you know, kicks in 80% of the above, which is not really health insurance. But through Obamacare, I got a great policy. I mean, it is a terrific policy. I'm paying less on prescription costs, paying less on doctor's visits. It is terrific. Okay. So anyway, where are you getting your data on Obamacare versus the private health insurance?
Yeah,
market?
I mean, is it anecdotal? This is what you've been hearing from people on,
that's correct,
when you campaign?
That's correct. But, Jay, I tell you what, I really would like to sit out and talk with you and see what you have, because that's not what I'm hearing when I'm talking across this state. And you talk about, I put over 80,000 miles on my car in 7 months. I've been to all stretches and reaches of this state, so I haven't heard the same thing, Jay. You are I don't know, what do they call
in
that?
Your view, in
an anomaly,
in a minority, in your view, in your experience, from the people that you're hearing from.
Yes.
Of course, would you concede that a lot of people you're hearing from were opposed to Obamacare to begin with?
No.
No?
No, no.
Okay.
Many of which were actually big fans of this opportunity. They really thought it would work. I mean, my brother's a good example. He really thought it would work until he was able to go online and get the insurance and then see how much in premiums he had to pay out of pocket.
Were higher than what he was paying, was he uninsured?
He was uninsured before.
Okay, but he has insurance now.
Uh-huh.
Is this a good thing or not? I mean,
I think
he was just shocked at the cost?
At the sticker value, absolutely, because before you get anything covered outside of medications and prescriptions, mm-hmm, you're paying way more out of pocket than you ever thought you would have to before.
Let's meet Ken Timmerman. Ken Timmerman was chosen by Charles Lawler to run with him on the ticket, Lawler Timmerman. Ken, thank you for joining us here on Midday.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.
Ken, I know that Charles ran for Congress 4 years ago against Steny Hoyer, and you had your own run against Congress. for a seat in Congress. So take a minute, just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, including your run for Congress.
Well, I'm an investigative reporter by trade. I've spent much of the past 30 years in countries that you read about on the front pages of the newspapers, whether it's Iraq, Syria, Libya, Lebanon, Israel, all across the Middle East. I've written a number of books about this. I have a book on Benghazi that actually I had finished just before Charles asked me to join his ticket, and it will be coming out in about 10 days' time. I'm also the former president of the Maryland Taxpayers Association, so I've been deeply engaged in budget issues here in Maryland, budget and tax issues, and following them. As you mentioned, in 2012, I was the Republican nominee to run against Chris Van Hollen in the redistricted, gerrymandered 8th Congressional District. I won 63% in Carroll County. I won 61% from the citizens of Frederick County in the general election, and then went down to about 30% in Montgomery County.
And Ken, what did Charles Lawler tell you your assignment would be as a lieutenant governor if elected?
Well, Charles picked me for my investigative background, and I am really thrilled to be working at his side. And we are going to investigate every single state agency, every tax, every new bill of revenue that has been passed over the past 7 to 8 years. And I really look forward to spearheading that effort. And where we need to do it, we're going to have outside audits, independent outside audits. I happen to think that we're going to find an awful lot of not just waste, not just wasteful spending. I'm convinced we're going to find an awful lot of cronyism and corrupt contracts just in our own first sweep into those budgets. And after that, we're going to have the outside auditors come in so everybody, they don't have to take our word for the kind of waste and corruption that we found. They'll be able to see it from an independent auditing firm.
It's very interesting. You're choosing a lieutenant governor running mate with a specific assignment in mind. Did you got to know Ken Timmerman from what, the Maryland Taxpayers Association?
Yes. Also, he's been a leader in the community for some time. I endorsed him for his race for governor against Chris Van Hollen in 2012.
For Congress
in 2012. And, you know, he and his wife, Christine, are just, they're wonderful people. They're going to make you all such a strong and effective lieutenant governor. And he's right, it is because of those investigative reporting skills. We don't need a lieutenant governor to go around kiss babies and ruin the Affordable Health Care Act rollout website by $200 million and just waste money. We need one that's going to roll up his sleeves and actually get things done for the citizens of our state, which we intend to do, and Ken will be just the guy to get that done.
And Ken, for the record, where do you live in Maryland?
I live in Urbana. We spent 21 years in Montgomery County and moved to Urbana earlier this year. Our kids are the last of our 5 children is safely off to college down in Salisbury. So we can live downsize a little bit and enjoy those being empty nesters.
Okay. Ken, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. Thank you.
Thank you. Great pleasure.
Ken Timmerman, who is a conservative activist, investigative reporter, and writer who's running with Charles Lawler on the ticket, Lawler Timmerman, for governor of Maryland in the Republican primary. Urbana is in Frederick County. Mike is in Annapolis, and we'll go to him for the next question. Mike, you're on with Charles Lawler. Go right ahead, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Dan. Good afternoon, Mr. Lawler.
Hey,
hi.
Mike.
I have a question about a comment you made just a few moments ago about opposing medical marijuana, and I must assume with that, legalizing marijuana in Maryland. You have on your signs all over the place that you want to remove personal income tax from Maryland. I assume much of they have in Florida. Yet there's no reciprocal way for revenue to come in. So it seems the most logical way would be to create a new revenue source. And I think Colorado has proven that legalizing marijuana is an excellent way of doing that without taxing the people. It's a consumption tax. So
okay.
Why would you be opposed to that as a conservative?
Mike, please, let's make sure we're clear about something. Legalizing marijuana, no, I would not do that. But to assume that by eliminating the personal income tax that we won't have the revenues to make up for it is completely false. We're talking about doing something over a 5-year period when we talk about rolling back or completely eliminating the personal income tax. It's about $6.3 billion over a 5-year period. Listen, the state of Maryland has increased their spending by almost $10 billion in 8 years. If we simply maintain the same growth, Mike, just maintain the same growth, but instead of spending all of it, like, for example, 2014 to 2015, We spent an additional $2.3 billion, or 7% growth. What if we'd only grown at CPI, or 1.25%? See, that's why we're going to work hard with this current legislature to pass a real taxpayer's bill of rights. Now, Mike, what this will do is it will tie the growth of spending directly with cost of living, or CPI. And no longer would your state government grow any faster than cost of living. We could have saved the citizens of Maryland almost $1.5 billion alone if we had went to that structure this year. Take $1.5 billion over 4 years, you get $6 billion. We could phase it out over 6 years at those rates. The assessment you're making, and I'll end with this, Mike, the assessment you're making is that they're spending the money properly now. And, sir, quite honestly, they're not. The question you should ask yourself is, how do we just lose? How do we get away with losing $220 million on a failed website rollout for the Affordable Health Care Act, but yet we don't have the money to replace that? How do we just do away with $200 million? It's because there's more than enough out there for us to make up the difference for us to eliminate the personal income tax.
Another question from Towson. Herman, you're on Midday. Go right ahead with your question, please.
Oh, thanks for taking my question,
yep.
Dan.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lawler.
How you doing, Herman?
I'm okay, but I have two quick questions for you, which I can even take off the air. First, you keep throwing around the figures of $10 billion in spending, but you don't say what it was spent on. All of it could not have been unnecessary. But specifically, I'd like to know how much of that was spent on shoring up our infrastructure, which is in serious need of repair, and the repairs are long overdue. That's my first question. My second question is, could you please tell me what good fracking is? I've looked into it. And I've talked it over with engineers, and as far as I can see, there's no such thing.
What do you mean there's no such thing? There's no such thing as a benefit from fracking for natural gas?
Not the benefit. It destroys the environment.
Right. You're saying the environmental risk is too high for what you get out
yes.
of it.
Yes. What is good fracking?
First of all, you want to go to his $10 billion question? I mean, that's a legitimate question.
It is. Let me work backwards, though, first, because this one takes a second.
Right.
Herman, please understand, we're talking about safe fracking, okay? That word good, I use the word safe environmental fracking. We are currently, United States of America currently is number one in exporting of gas. Number one. We export more natural gas than anyone else in the world. We've been doing this now for years. So we're already practicing safe fracking. And it can be done here in Maryland as well. So please don't distort that with things you've heard. It can be done, and it can be done safely. Other states are doing it, at least 12 of them. We can do it too. Getting back to the first question on the $10 billion in revenue, can we assume that it's all being wasted?
Yeah, right.
You would be amazed, sir. You would be amazed how much of it has been wasted over the past 10 years, and very little of it has gone to proper infrastructure. This is why I'm getting involved with this race for governor to begin with, Herman. Picture this, and I said this to the other caller. We just wasted $250 million with an M on a healthcare website that is still broken, and we're going to have to spend another $200 million on it. No one's asking a question of where that money come from. How did we just lose $200 million? We just took another $220 million from teacher pensions to try to balance up a cost for rebuilding this purple line that went from estimates of $1.1 billion to now $2.3 billion, and we haven't even broke ground on it yet. You'd be amazed how much wasteful spending is being done down there in Annapolis, but that is why, Herman, I want your permission to go down there and find out where it is so we can change it to ensure we are spending the people's money properly.
Okay. Before we get off the air here, the purple line, are you opposed to the purple line?
We can't afford it, Dan.
We cannot afford it.
Even with a billion plus dollars
from the federal government.
It's not a billion plus. The federal government's only given us $500 million. When we found out the cost would grow
by
from
the time we're done,
to,
it could be much higher.
No, not yet.
You don't see economic growth coming from Purple Line? You don't see a public benefit to it?
I see economic growth coming from bringing business jobs back to our state of Maryland. Not public ones, Dan. We need private jobs.
I get you. Charles Lawler has been our guest in this hour of the show, a Republican candidate in the Maryland primary, which is next Tuesday, June 24th. LOLLAR, Charles Lawler. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, Charles helped us kick off our Midday Candidates Week. Next up, Heather Mazier will be joining us. She's a Democratic candidate for governor. She'll be with us in the second hour of our show today. We're going to take a break now for lunch and thank Atwaters for providing a picnic lunch today with all kinds of great goodies out there, including vegetarian option and desserts and a pulled pork sandwich. Thank you, Atwaters. Thank you very much. Stay tuned for the news, and then we'll see you for the second hour of our show.